Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, everybody. First day of the football season. Oh, yeah. It's that time of the year we always look forward to. If for no other reason than the NFL preview happens around 7:30 this morning, that always puts a big smile on our face. Good morning, I'm Bob Salter. Up until then, we're going to have a good discussion with a guest who has joined us before on our program. Always a timely discussion when Polly Franks joins us. Polly is an author of a book entitled Devil at My Door. We'll talk about that in the course of our discussion. We're also going to talk with her about being the director of It's Not Your Fault. Polly, welcome back to our program. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
In beginning this discussion, and you know, this will seem strange to the two of us because we've talked many times previously and had very good discussions on air, but there are some people who are listening to our discussion today who've never heard our previous chats. When I say to you, it's not your fault, the organization that you direct, how do you explain what it's all about?
Well, I named it It's Not Your Fault basically because I kept telling survivors of childhood sexual abuse that it wasn't their fault. I was so impressed in a negative way that so many people, so many adults, middle-aged and older, had never told anyone that they had been sexually abused as children, and were blaming themselves. It's one of the few crimes, if not the only crime that I know of, where the victim is so often blamed. And so in the aftermath of my own experience with a sexual predator who came after my children, I formed this foundation, and we are founded in order to help victims of childhood sexual abuse. And we do a lot of work with hospital emergency rooms through our Operation Fuzzy program to help children who are brought into the emergency rooms. I just continuously was amazed at how many people walk around silently, basically being given life sentences for what has happened to them through no fault of their own.
When you think about the numbers of people who fall in that category, does anybody have an idea on, or an estimate, I guess it would be even a guesstimate, as to how many people that might be?
It's at least 20% of the population.
Wow.
Which is amazing. It's one out of six males and one out of four females by the time they reach the age of 18. Have had some sort of sexual abuse. And most people think it was just them, and it's not. It's so many. It's incredible. I was stunned when I first got into this type of work. Many people that I had known for decades were telling me that they had been victims of sexual abuse. They had never told anyone. They'd been walking around all these years carrying this weight that had been inflicted upon them. Also, I had complete strangers walk up to me and tell me. It was just incredible. And they said, I've never told anybody.
And again, you know, you use the phrase child sexual abuse, and that stops a lot of people in their tracks. You know, it's not a comfortable thing for most of us to say, definitely not a comfortable thing for us to think about. It's another one of these cases of something that a lot of people would prefer just sort of be pushed away and sort of hidden in a corner. But that's really the wrong approach, isn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, the way people react to this issue reminds me a great deal of the way people reacted to the AIDS issue in the early 80s.
Mm.
They don't want to look at it, don't want to acknowledge it, and a lot of people feel like if we ignore it, it doesn't exist.
But that's far from the truth. You know, you mentioned your own experience with this, and you've talked about this before on our program, but again, there are people who are listening, never heard the discussion before. What was your experience?
Well, we had a friend and neighbor of many years who he was the husband of one of my best friends. We turned out he had been a convicted serial rapist from Texas, from San Antonio. He had been this very nice, polite, congenial neighbor we had been known as the ski mask rapist of San Antonio, Texas. This was just prior to the passage of Megan's Law, and so we had no way of knowing, and I say this to people all the time, you cannot tell by the looks of anyone, because this crosses all demographics. This could be anyone, as we've seen in the news from prior cases that have gone public. We found out the hard way. We found out after he attempted an assault on my 8 and 9-year-old daughters, who were best friends with his daughter. And so that's how the whole nightmare began. It really was like a bolt out of the blue. It had never occurred to us that someone who was so polite and so helpful and nice and seemingly a devoted dad and husband and friend could really be a monster.
How did you get the truth about him?
I'm sorry?
How did you get the truth about him?
It took a long time. It took a very, very long time. I was extremely frustrated because our DA decided to basically make a deal with this guy and give him a suspended sentence, which is, I'm sure, as a lot of people know, suspended sentences for hardcore criminals are nothing. It's not even a slap on the wrist. I was so enraged. The DA had told me at that point that he was convicted of rape in another state years earlier, but that they couldn't or wouldn't use it against him in this case, which just added to the horror, like, oh my gosh, I've known this man for years, and he's a monster, and I had no idea. How could I let him fly in under my radar? I'd always considered myself to be a shrewd judge of character. So it became a living nightmare. And at some point I realized that we were not going to get any, in our particular case, we were not getting any real help from law enforcement. They told us they were going to keep an eye on him. They did not. Our neighbors were seeing him in the middle of the night in our yard, despite a restraining order, which of course turned out to be not worth the paper it was written on. So I had to do something, or I was frankly just going to implode or explode. So I became a licensed private investigator and went after him myself.
Which is an incredible effort when you stop and think about it. What was he doing in your yard in the middle of the night?
I'm not clear, but the point is he wasn't supposed to be there.
Right. Obviously.
You know, the neighbor had, you know, had just been up in the middle of the night and had seen him there.
Mm-hmm.
I called the police, of course, the minute I heard about this, And their response was, well, we talked to him about it. He says he didn't do it. So that was the end of the discussion, which horrified me. I wanted to say, whose side are you people on? It was just so frustrating. And I realized in our case, we were really on our own.
How much did you know about this area of the law before all this started with him?
Very little. I was basically a babe in the woods when it comes to this issue. I had known, of course, as an adult, that there were sexual predators out there. I remember hearing at one point that, and this is true, 90% of children who are sexually abused know their abuser. It's not always the weird, sweaty, creepy guy hanging out in the playground. Quite often it's grandpa or the coach or the pastor. Could be anyone. And so at the time, I had racked my brain trying to think if there was anybody in our world through church or the neighborhood or through work or any of our friends who were capable of anything like that. And I felt assured that no, nobody we knew was certainly capable of doing that. And so I was living in a very naive never-never land.
It's an amazing story. We've really just scratched the surface and starting to talk with Polly Franks on our program. We'll get into talking about the motivation for the book Devil at My Door as well in our discussion. Polly is director of It's Not Your Fault, which is on the web, by the way, at itsnotyourfault, that's all as one word, .us. And there's a lot of different things we're going to share in the course of our discussion. We'll also talk from the standpoint of what people who are listening to our discussion today can do to be supportive of your efforts. And there's a lot of information on the It's Not Your Fault website, as well as Devil at My Door has a website, which we'll give you in the course of this discussion, too. Different areas where I want to go, and I want to talk, too, about this whole issue, Polly, of law enforcement. And then I guess we also get into talking a little bit about the whole approach policy-wise with the sexual predators. A lot to discuss in the course of our chat. We'll continue in our discussion with Polly Franks on our program On the Fan this Sunday morning. It is Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. You know, I got to stop socializing during this program and get back to the actual show. I get involved in so many different things around here on Sundays. We are in a discussion with Polly Franks on our program. She's the director of It's Not Your Fault, the author of Devil at My Door, an interesting publication. In talking with policymakers about this issue of sexual predators and children, did they take this topic seriously?
Some are absolute champions, and frankly, some are idiots.
don't hold back now.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. It's amazing. I tried to get some help from one of our state senators here in Virginia, who basically informed me that we didn't have a problem with sexual predators in Virginia, which just floored me at his ignorance. I'm very thankful that we have some, and this is bipartisan. We've had some great progress made on Capitol Hill with the Amber Alert Bill, with the Adam Walsh Child Protection Act. It's taken both sides of the aisle. But, yes, it's like I guess politicians in many ways are like the rest of us in that so many people, if they don't want to acknowledge something exists, it's easier for them to live with themselves.
But, you know, you also think about the fact that you dealt basically, for lack of a better term, with a monster in terms of this individual. Because of the different crimes in terms of sexual attacks that he was connected to, when you talk about the reality of something like this to this legislator, doesn't the person open up as opposed to saying, well, you know, in Virginia, we don't have a problem?
Do they open up how?
Does he open up? Does he become more receptive to what you're talking about? I mean, you know, you've had firsthand experience with somebody that, you know, basically you and I are both saying was a monster.
Right. Well, that the particular politician I was speaking to absolutely did not. Kept looking at his watch and was as rude as he could be.
Lovely. Isn't that just lovely?
Mm. I know, and he had just recently been reelected on a "Let's Get Tough on Crime" platform, which absolutely floored me when I met him one on one. That he could be one so rude and two so ignorant. Fortunately, he's no longer in office.
Mm. Well, I guess there are some blessings that do occur.
All right. Yes.
When we talk about this individual who, unfortunately, came into your life and had this horrific background, what ultimately happened to him?
Well, I was, like I said, I was so frustrated and so enraged that our law enforcement wasn't doing anything. And then our neighbors were seeing him in the middle of the night in our yard. I was so mad that when I became a licensed private investigator to go after him myself, it took 3 years. It didn't happen overnight. It took a lot of work and a lot of just hanging in there. Just because, if for no other reason, I needed an outlet for my frustration and my rage. I had to do something. It took a very long time, but he is now thankfully in life, doing life in prison, in a supermax prison here in Virginia.
So is there any possibility that he gets considered for parole?
At first, for the first 18 years, I was told absolutely not. Unfortunately, my state has passed what they call geriatric consideration, which makes him eligible for parole now every 3 years, despite being given this life sentence without parole, because he's 62 years old. It's 60 and over, which, as I'm sure most of the listeners here will agree, 60 is not geriatric in this day and age, and some people are not safe at any age.
That's the thing, is that, you know, you have to stop and look at the individual case. Looking at his case and, you know, the work that you have done in this regard, this was a very bold step on your part, becoming a licensed private investigator. And as you said, you needed an outlet. Was that the only thing you ever considered in terms of a way of responding to?
Oh, of course I considered responding in other ways, but that would have put me in jail.
You read my mind, okay.
Many, many, many other scenarios went through my head, but I had children to raise, and they needed me here, and I knew I was not sly enough and fast enough to get away with premeditated murder. Mm-hmm. So my faith in the justice system was shaken to the core, I felt like I had to take that route instead.
And becoming a licensed private investigator, you know, you said it took several years. Once you had that title, how could you put that to use? How did you put that to use?
Well, I learned it when I was in PI class, ways of doing surveillance. You know, there's a difference between doing surveillance and actual stalking somebody. Mm-hmm. But I learned how to gather information, learned a lot of things that turned out to be just plain common sense, but that I just didn't know at the time that you could do. But ways of watching and developing patterns, I was I remember being so frustrated because I felt like I was just wasting my time and not doing anything. And my PI instructor, who also was a police officer, told me, he said, addicts are their own worst enemy. His behavior is an addiction, and he will reveal himself in time. He's not going to be able to get away with this because he's got a compulsion in a way that he cannot control or chooses not to control.
And as more of his past came to light, did the responsiveness, receptiveness, if I can phrase it that way, of law enforcement that you were working with change?
Well, it was very interesting to me. After he had finally been arrested yet again in a neighboring community in Richmond, and was basically caught with his hands in the proverbial cookie jar, and it made the news, finally, the Richmond news, Richmond, Virginia news. A reporter, an eagle-eyed reporter from the Washington Post, dug up the fact that this had also, that Richmond's bandana bandit, as the police had called him, turned out, lo and behold, to be the ski mask rapist of San Antonio from the early 1980s. And so that's when, as the old saying goes, hell broke loose. The national media came calling and wanted to know, with our law enforcement, how come you guys didn't know this? And, of course, they had known about San Antonio, but they went into CYA mode, as I'm sure you can understand,
yep.
and developed an acute case of amnesia, and were telling the media they had never spoken to me about this. They knew nothing about his past, and basically went into protecting themselves.
Well, that must have made you feel lovely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty enraging when you see the law and see the, it wasn't the police officers, but the DA and the DA's office lie and call you a liar on local television, basically saying that no such conversation ever took place, basically just to protect their own careers. It was very eye-opening.
Simply amazing when you stop and think about it. What kept you going?
My kids, basically. I knew, even though I was mired in this and it seemed like there was no way out, I knew that I was on the right side. And that I for some reason, that defied any kind of explanation to me. This had happened to us, and so therefore I had to do something about it. So many people, I found out later, who had also been victimized by that man were so devastated. I knew of one particular mother who ended up dying, and I believe the stress of this did this to her. She was a young woman. So the wreck and the harm that was going on, so many times I felt like I was fighting a losing battle, but I just felt like I had to fight. There was really no other option.
Hmm. And doing the book, Devil at My Door, what did that do for you?
It was very cathartic. It took a very long time to write the book, mm-hmm. frankly, because the story kept changing as I was writing it. But it was an outlet, and I wrote Devil at My Door not just to tell a very bizarre story, bizarre and yet very common story, but I also wanted to give the reader information to protect themselves, to protect their own family, and to share things in the book that I had learned in PI class. Just so somebody can know these things, how to do surveillance, how to get information, different things that I had learned that I had found interesting when I was in class. So I wanted to not really, of course, the story itself is not entertaining, but I wanted to share the story and inform people and empower the reader so that they come away with so much information about how they can be their own PI in many cases, how they can also keep from becoming victims as we were, and how they can protect their own families.
Okay, I want to talk about that idea of how it is to keep from becoming victims. Obviously, too, at this time of the year, it's back to school time. We'll talk a little bit about some safety tips for back to school as well as we continue in our discussion. We're talking with Polly Franks on our program and talking with her about Devil at My Door, which is her book. What's the website for Devil at My Door, by the way?
DevilAtMyDoor.com.
DevilAtMyDoor.com. She's also the director of It's Not Your Fault on the web at It'sNotYourFault.us. And she's talking with us, very important discussion, and hopefully one where you are learning some things as well in our program here on The Fan. It is Sunday morning on The Fan, and good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We are in a discussion with Polly Franks on our program. Polly is the author of Devil at My Door, and she is the director of It's Not Your Fault, and she's talking with us on our program. In the past, we've had a couple of interesting situations, too, where we've worked in some thoughts from some of the folks listening to us. You want to join us on the toll-free, you can, 877-337-6666, if you're on point with what we're talking about here today, 877-337-6666. One of the thoughts I had, Polly, in our discussion goes back to this idea of we were talking about before Chris's update and the commercial messages, trying to protect oneself and trying to prevent being a victim in one of these cases. What kind of advice can you give in that regard?
The first thing I always give people, Bob, is to look up your sex offender registry. It's there for a reason, and it's a hard-fought-for resource that was not available in my own case. I recommend Family Watchdog. It's familywatchdog.us because it's nationwide. Find out who's in your neighborhood. Find out who's near your child's school. Find out who's in grandma's neighborhood or babysitter's neighborhood. Any place where your child is going to be spending a considerable amount of time, who's in the neighborhood of your temple or your church, wherever your child is going to be spending time, find out who's in that neighborhood. With Family Watchdog, you could also get emails updated if a predator has moved into that address that you list with them. It has been a tremendous service for me because even since our nightmare, we've had more predators move in. But it's an excellent tool to start with to just know, to empower yourself. Find out who's out there. And I don't care if you live in a multi-million-dollar home or if you are in the projects, you have an equal chance of having a predator in your community.
And in some cases, multiple predators in your community, too, because one of the things when you look at a site like familywatchdog.us, you are absolutely shocked at how many people who fall in this category of being sexual predators are literally, you know, some people would say a stone's throw away.
Pretty much. And this also gives not only their home address, home locations, but their work locations. So if they work near your house, or certainly anywhere near the school bus stop, anywhere near the school, don't assume that just because the predator is not supposed to live near a school that he doesn't. There are too many predators and not enough law enforcement to keep that law going. It's up to us to find out.
You know, and some cases a police department may have one person who falls in that category of being assigned to keep a watch on those who fall in this category of being sexual predators because of convictions in their past or guilty pleas in their past, to charges in that regard. And that one member of law enforcement could be watching a ton of people. And obviously, they're not going to be able to track or keep track of everybody and all of their movements and where they may be at all times. It's almost an impossible task, isn't it?
Right. There's not enough law enforcement to go around to do that. Laws may be in place, but you cannot count on them consistently being informed. To give you an example, several years ago, right before Halloween, I discovered to my horror that we had another predator just around the corner from my house. And so I called the police officer in charge of sex crimes for our county and told him about this. And of course, he knew about this individual. In this particular case, his probation had been completed, and so on Halloween, he was absolutely entitled to have his lights on and let as many kids in his house as he wanted, which absolutely horrified me. There's a urban myth that all sexual predators have to lock their doors and turn their lights out on Halloween night. And again, there's not enough law enforcement to enforce that law. So you need to find out who your child is going to be exposed to in those situations. I was very, very concerned. So I figured, well, I can either put out a notice or I can sit in front of his house all night on Halloween in the cold. So what I did was I printed the information from the website, which is public information, just for the neighborhood, people in the immediate area, to know to keep their children from going to this man's house and coming into his sights and into his circle of knowing where the child lived. It was the least I could do, but I felt very limited and very frustrated that he indeed was going to be able to participate in Halloween.
What was the response of your neighbors?
They were very appreciative. They were shocked. We have a nice neighborhood, but so do a lot of people. They were pretty shocked. There were no confrontations. There was no harassment of any kind, which is, I always tell people, leave the predators alone. Don't become part of the problem. Don't harass this person in any way. But just know that your children are not going to be safe with this individual. In this case, this particular predator had been convicted of trafficking child pornography. Mm. And so that left little doubt to me as to what he was. So I felt like I had to do something and that doing nothing was not an option. So many people had given our predator so many second chances, and the body count of victims had just piled up into the hundreds because of that. So I was not going to let this happen.
Mm. And that night, did anybody send their or allow their children to actually go to his home?
I hope not. Like I said, I didn't sit in front of his house all night.
Mm-hmm.
I had my own kids to deal with. But I'm hoping that some people were made aware and were wise enough to keep their children from him.
This idea of the experience that you went through, the experience that your daughters went through, what do they say about this today? And how, I guess, what was the strength that helped them in surviving?
Well, two things I made sure that they understood. The first and most important was that this was absolutely not their fault. This was 100% his fault. They were children, and there's no reasonable explanation for his behavior. Secondly, I wanted them to make sure that they understood that most men are not like this. I pointed out, you know, their father, their grandfathers, their uncles would die to protect them from something like that. So I didn't want them to grow up to be angry or fearful of men. And they've taken that lesson to heart.
So when we look at this issue, awareness is obviously key. You know, I mentioned earlier this idea that it's back to school time. What kind of tips, what kind of advice can you give some of the parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles who are listening to this discussion today?
Okay, well, one thing I said, I know I'm going to be very unpopular and be a real buzzkill when I say this, but it just is not safe for a child to walk to or from school by themselves. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. I also tell them, if your child is old enough to be in kindergarten, he or she is old enough to memorize their school bus number and also their home address and their home phone number. I would say also school bus stops where the children gather in the morning are magnets for pedophiles, and so there needs to be an adult there, a trusted adult there in the mornings until everybody's gotten on the bus. The same in the afternoon. There's just, you know, these are things that parents can do, or grandparents if they're retired, they can do. Make sure your child also understands that grown-ups don't need help from them. Grown-ups are not supposed to ask children for directions to find a house or to find a missing pet, anything like that. You know, an adult does not need help from a little kid. They need to know this. Just things like this. And one thing I also tell people as well is to have a code word between you and your child. And so make sure the child knows that he or she is not to go with anybody who doesn't know the code word. They're not to get in the car or go into their home unless they know it, because that creates a very profound layer of safety. There was a case, for instance, in Yonkers several years ago where a mother had sat down with her 8-year-old son. They decided on a code word that he was not to go with anybody who didn't know it. And lo and behold, 2 days later, a neighbor came over to invite him over for a pizza party with video games, and he did not know the code word. The kid runs inside and tells his mom, and it turns out this was a predator out on parole who was trying to lure the boy into his home. But the 8-year-old was enabled and given the tools to protect himself. So I think one of the things, too, that I've learned, and as a mother of three, I know we can tell our children some things. It depends on their age. But children, even very young children, know just from watching, say, a Disney movie or from watching cartoons on Saturday morning that there are bad people. There are bad guys and there are good guys. They know that from the earliest of ages, watching these movies and these cartoons. So they can understand that, yes, and that they know that they can protect themselves and that other people are going to protect them as well.
That idea that you're communicating that to young kids, I guess that's a way for them to kind of grasp the concept of what you're talking about without overwhelming them. You know, because the topic's a heady one. As we said at the beginning of this discussion, this is a topic that most adults don't want to tackle.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't expect kids are going to want to jump and tackle this, or even when they're really young, understand the full implications of what we're talking about.
Right. One of the basic things I tell people is make sure your child knows that he or she can tell you anything, and that they're going to be safe, and that they're going to be believed. You would not believe the emails and letters I get from individuals who are well into middle age who are carrying scars, not just from having been victims of a sexual predator, but from having gone home and told mom or dad and not being believed. And that is it, just as bad, if not worse, than the incident itself.
That's an amazing fact. And, you know, you think also that that's got to have lasting scars, too.
Right. Well, you know, it's the old, as Al Gore used to say about the environment, this is a very inconvenient truth. People would much rather think that this isn't happening or that the child is making it up. Children of a certain age are not supposed to know anything about sexual matters. So if they know something, there's a red flag.
Polly Franks is talking with us on our program. She's the author of Devil at My Door, on the web at devilatmydoor, that's all this one word, .com. She's the director of It's Not Your Fault. The organization's on the web at itsnotyourfault, that's all this one word, .us. And I've mentioned, too, that you know, sometimes we get some people who are on point with what we're talking about and want to make a comment. You can join us, 877-337-6666. But again, it's a topic that, for the most part, a lot of people want to steer as far away from as they possibly can. And that gets to the issue that, in a way, we started this discussion with, but I want to talk about. And it's this idea that it's 2017. Have we gotten any better, Polly, than we were back in 1997?
I believe so, as far as information goes. Mm-hmm. And it, again, I compare it to the origins of the AIDS issue when people did not want to acknowledge it or they wanted, again, to blame the victims. We've gotten better. I mean, obviously, as long as there's humankind around, there will be sexual predators. Thankfully, and this is one of my quests in life, frankly, is just to inform people and make sure they realize from my own situation that these people are around. They can be anywhere, and there's too many of them for law enforcement to protect us from them all the time. I think we're better, but we're not anywhere near where we need to be.
And being aware, being alert. I mean, we hear this all the time with the topic of terrorism and how we should be on the alert if we see something, say something, etc. And especially with the anniversary or commemoration of 9/11, literally tomorrow, there'll be a lot more talk in this regard, too, over the next day or so. But even with this issue of sexual predators in our society, by being aware, by even being willing to talk about this topic, is that a way of actually addressing the issue in a fashion where, you know, this is not something where somebody can just lure your child and have their way with the child in a secretive fashion?
Right, absolutely. You can empower your children, and of course it all depends on the age of the child, but you can empower your children to keep themselves safe to a point. Again, I go back to the having a code word between parent and child, you know, not going into anyone's house or anyone's car without them knowing the code word. Things you can teach your child, just plain old common sense. And one thing I've run into, again, as you've mentioned, so much denial. To me, and if what I have seen, denial on part of America's parents is one of the greatest dangers to America's children. Keeping your head in the sand and saying that it doesn't exist, you're not doing your children any favors by doing that. One thing I also do, I recommend, is for children, once school has begun, if it's at all humanly possible, children over the age of 10 should be allowed to have a cell phone to be used in emergencies only. You know, I can make sure that they have direct dial to 911, to their parents' work numbers, to their home number, to a trusted adult, you know, such as grandma or someone that they know they can trust. Have that with them. So all they've got to do is push a button. That's another layer of protection. And again, it's a way of empowering your child, not in a fearful way, but saying, here, you know, you've got this power. You can do this. Because they've seen these things. They've seen years ago there were the Power Rangers. There were these, you know, they know about these heroes and the bad guys alone just from watching the cartoons in the morning.
Mm-hmm. What about, considering the fact that we're talking on WFAN this morning, these extracurricular activities involving athletics and sports? Because a lot of kids are involved in activities in school, after school. Does that put them at risk?
Not necessarily. I do believe, you know, the overwhelming majority of coaches and pastors and individuals who are involved with children have only their best interest. But to me, it is imperative for Boy Scouts, for coaches, for any troop leaders, anyone should have be subjected to a criminal background check before they're allowed anywhere near a child. It's just amazing how many people don't do it until after the fact. And then, of course, that's letting the horses out of the barn too late. It's very simple, you can do. And it's, to me, we owe it to our kids. It's not, if nothing else, make sure that this person is not on the sex offender registry, because these areas are magnets for pedophiles. And so the adults, you know, need to be able to tell Boy Scout troop leaders, you know, you're going to have to go through this before we let you near our boys or the girls, or a youth leader in a church. You know, these things need to be done. They're another layer of protection, and it amazes me how many organizations don't even think to do that. I would think the Sandusky case alone, mm-hmm. and the pedophile priest issue alone would be reason for people to realize we need to check these people out before we leave them alone with our kids for hours at a time.
You would think that'd be part of the legacy, if I can phrase it that way, of, you know, you mentioned it because I've been sitting here biting my tongue with the name Jerry Sandusky running through my head. And as you mentioned, that unfortunately, been a number of cases of pedophile priests and others as well. You would think part of the legacy of those cases and events would be that, yeah, there should be greater awareness and there should be pretty much a uniform practice of background checks. You know, people being thorough in examining exactly who it is who may come in contact with children.
Absolutely. Before you're letting your child join a scout troop or some athletic organization or any kind of sport or anything that involves an adult who has access to your children for hours at a time, sometimes overnight, make sure that organization is doing background checks on them. It doesn't matter how long you may have known this very kind person. Make sure you do a background check. Don't ever assume. We all know what happens when you assume. Mm-hmm. There was a case in Georgia of a college professor at the University of Georgia a few years ago who was doing work with special education on the side, tutoring children. Well, it turns out he was a convicted predator. He'd already done time, 3 years in prison in Alabama. And nobody at the university had ever done a background check on him. He was a tenured professor before anybody ever found out.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Well, and, you know, in this day and age, there's no reason why you can't do a background check. You know, in this day with Google searches and been verified or any of these others, there's no reason why you can't do this. It doesn't take that long of a time, and it's just a layer of protection. It doesn't cost a great deal. It doesn't cost a great deal of time. I just don't understand why people don't do it. It makes no sense to me.
Holly Franks talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. It's the Football Sunday program as it evolves with Mark Melusis in the captain's role of that program after our 9 o'clock update this morning, and Boomer Esiason and the gang along with the NFL preview at 7:30. I'm Bob Salter. We're in a discussion that we started at the beginning of our program at 6 this morning, and yes, we go from 6 until 7:30. In this time of the year, in football season, we're in a discussion with Polly Franks on our program. She's the author of Devil at My Door, devilatmydoor, that's all as one word, .com, the companion website for the book. She is also the director of It's Not Your Fault, all as one word, .us, the companion website. People listening to our discussion today who are touched by what you've shared with us in this discussion, concerned about this issue, what can they do to be supportive of the efforts of It's Not Your Fault?
Well, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we certainly need help, as much, you know, tax-deductible donations as we possibly can. We have an Operation Fuzzy program, as I call it, that we give stuffed animals and comfort, what we call comfort kits, to children in hospital emergency rooms. And we have we've worked this also with Presbyterian Hospital in your neck of the woods, and basically several hospitals throughout the country. This is just to help comfort the child when they're in the emergency room, and the stuffed animal and the comfort kits, which are art supplies, give them a chance to tell their story in a non-threatening way and to be able to tell what happened. So that's our mission, is basically to try to get the child right away and make sure that they know it's not their fault, you're being believed, the grown-ups who love you are going to take care of this situation and are going to protect you.
How are those comfort kits received?
They are very welcome received. This was created by me and by an individual who was a forensic nurse examiner here in Richmond, Virginia. And it was designed for the child, but also as a means for the medical personnel and law enforcement to be able to get information from a child in a non-threatening, non-confrontational way, so they can find out exactly what has happened. And the stuffed animals are used often to show the child how and where they'll be examined. And they're brand new, and they're for the child to keep. So, you know, many, many times, especially throughout the holidays, these are the only things some children get, which is sad. But we're so happy that we can do this. It's been very, very successful in these emergency rooms, both for law enforcement and for the medical personnel, but most importantly, it's been very, very effective for the children.
So for people who are interested in donating, they do that through the website?
Yes, absolutely. There's a link on the itsnotyourfault.us for donations.
Earlier in our discussion, you talked a little bit about Family Watchdog. Would you just talk about that from the standpoint of people who've just joined us in our discussion? What's that all about?
Sure. It's a nationwide sex offender registry, and it's free. It takes maybe 5 minutes of your time, and I recommend it because I talk, of course, to audiences across the country, but you're in New York. You want to find out who's in your neighborhood, your child's best friend's neighborhood, all of that. But say you've got family in Florida, or you've got family in Arizona, wherever, you can find out who's in that neighborhood as well. I had a coworker who checked this when it first came out, and she found a neighbor of her mother in Los Angeles, a man right across the street from her mother, who was a convicted rapist. So she immediately called her mom and said, you know, be careful, don't let this man in your house.
Amazing, isn't it, when you stop and think about it? And also, it's also amazing what you can find because of the technology in this day and age, too.
Absolutely. That's why so many reasons why I wrote Devil at My Door was to give that kind of information. Again, not just to tell my own story, my own very bizarre story, unusual story, but also to give information and to empower people and to kind of learn how to be your own PI. And there's a part in the back, an index of how to keep your child safe, suggestions for back to school, all those scenarios. I wanted to give the reader lots of information that they can take away and use and continue to have for their children, grandchildren, neighborhood children, just something that people can use.
Interesting discussion with Polly Franks on our program on The Fan this morning. Sounds like somebody is trying to get your attention there too, Polly.
Oh, yes, I do apologize. That's Charlie.
Well, give Charlie a pet for us. Thank you very much for joining us on our program. Certainly good luck continued with the book and with your efforts with It's Not Your Fault.
Thank you, Bob.
It's the Sports Edge that follows our 8 o'clock update. The Football Sunday program with Mark Melusis at the helm will be long after our 9 o'clock update. Polly Frank's book is entitled Devil at My Door, Devil at My Door, all as one word, .com, the website. And the website for It's Not Your Fault is It's Not Your Fault. That's all as one word, .us. Good program, interesting one. Hopefully you learned some things as well. We're with you 6 to 7:30 a.m. this time of the year.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.